Hi, this is Manton Reese.
And this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Core Intuition, back to a de facto standard.
Manton Reese, they have robbed me of the one thing that brings me joy, which is to buy WWDC ticket and then return it.
There's a slight twist in WWDC this year, which is that there's no kind of thinking you might want to go, and so you'll put your name in the hat anyway. No, if you enter the lottery to get picked, they will charge your card. You have to be serious about it now.
Yeah, it's I kid about my past hijinks with getting and giving up tickets, but I actually think this sounds like whatever system they choose, there's going to be some niggling detail about it that is objectionable. But this to me seems like a pretty good compromise. You don't have to plan to wake up at like 3 a.m. in Saudi Arabia or whatever, if you happen to live in a time zone that's not suited to the start time. You don't have to worry about your credit card suddenly not being authorized. Maybe you do, actually. That's a good one to consider. But you don't have to worry about these things that could cause your web browser to stop processing the payment as you're starting to click furiously clicking buy. you just make sure your credit card. This is something that I think is going to bite. This number of people, actually, that was probably a reasonable prediction there when I said you don't have to worry about your credit card being approved, because I bet you do have to worry about that. And with the number of people who are going to be trying to purchase a ticket, I sure hope Apple is accounting for the problem that like 5% of the cards on those Apple ID accounts are like expired. Right? Like,
yeah.
Wouldn't you think it's, somebody's going to put their name in the hat and not think about whether their card is up to date, unless, and of course I haven't put my name in the hat, so I haven't gone through that sign up process, but maybe what they do is they kind of double check when you sign up that it looks like your card is, expires sometime after April 29th or whatever it is, the day that they're going to.
I bet they do that.
Choose the lucky breaker, lucky attendees.
I bet they do that because it's no different really than like pre-ordering an Apple Watch or something. They're not going to let you go through that process unless you have a valid credit card on file. And
I don't know if that's, is that true?
Well,
yeah, I guess that's true, huh?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't know. I haven't gone through this lottery process either, and I've decided not to enter the lottery this year. I think it just, I didn't have a ticket the last couple of years, and I've been to WWDC so many times, and I feel like I'm just going to go for a few days, and I'm going to remove all the stress of having to worry about the ticket. It's just a lot simpler. And also, someone else will get a chance. So I'm not even going to bother. So I haven't seen this process. Maybe someone else will post screenshots or, whatever it looks like. I'm kind of curious. But I did order an Apple Watch last week, and of course, before midnight Pacific time, I went in ahead of time and like made sure my credit card was right and, enabled whatever fast checkout thing, options were there.
Right.
And I assume that anyone who is serious about going to WWDC will do some basic work like that. It takes 5 minutes ahead of time to make sure everything is in order.
But even if you have an approved credit card and it's not expiring and it's valid, there's going to be like some percentage of tickets where it's like, for whatever reason, fraud detection or something, right?
Yeah, and that's true.
They're going to...
It's a big charge, yeah.
Hopefully Apple doesn't... because it's kind of like a sticky place for Apple then, because part of the encouragement here to... or the inducement of like charging it immediately is that you can't do this like flimsy game of deciding after the fact whether you actually want to go or not. So they need to like charge it immediately, but then it's not really fair if something beyond like the developer's control prevents the charge from going through, like their bank gets uptight about something.
I bet they reserve it.
Hopefully there's like some window, where they say, okay, we just need to like iron out this detail.
Yeah, I think that is totally fair. And it's much better than the previous year's approach for the reason you just said, but also because there was a lot of questions about what happens when a lot of people say they don't want a ticket? How are the other people notified, like the second round and the third round, and where does it end?
Right.
If a lot of people, yeah. And I know we've talked about this probably for hours last year, and I'm sure I ranted about how I didn't think it was a fair process. This is better.
Yep.
If they only have to worry about the small percentage of cards and not a much larger percentage of people who flake out at the last minute, which happened last year, then it's much improved process. I can't really find any complaint with this at all. I mean, I could go back if I really want to complain about something. I could go back to my, you know, sort of longstanding gripe, which is that they are not making any attempt recently to grow the conference. Like, they're very closed in Moscone West, and they just can't even come close to making the conference larger and getting more people in. But at this point, it's kind of like complaining about the App Store needing approval or something. It's like, I don't think that's going to change this year. It's probably not going to change next year either.
Right. Well, I can think of one sort of convoluted, but probably resonates with some people, problem with this, which is I can imagine some companies having maybe a sort of policy like it's only worth it to us to send a developer, if we can send like two developers, have them share a hotel room, I don't know, something like they want to really make the most of it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so like, I can imagine a situation where some company is like, okay, both of you developers sign up and try to get a ticket, but unless both of you get a ticket, we're not going to actually send either one of you. Does that sound too convoluted?
That is too convoluted. I can believe that might happen, but I bet it's almost no one. I think most people, so like my regular job, you know, in the years past, in the old days, like we sent everybody, right? And then it slowly kind of went down as the company grew and as WWC got more crowded, you know, maybe sent like five people. Last year, I think they sent one person. And it sucks for the other people, but I think that is a very common scenario out there for small businesses and for big ones. You just can't send many people anymore. And if you only get one, that's what you get.
Yeah.
And that's another change I think this year is that I think it's even more difficult to transfer tickets now. And I think I think I read and heard that you might not even be able to transfer them within a team. Like if you take the kind of letter of specifically what they have in the guidelines for buying a ticket, it's like it's your name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got it. It's like the Apple ID that wins, quote unquote, the purchase has to go.
And I think, again, that is the correct way to do it. Yes, it would be convenient if your whole team could all enter the lottery and then whoever won could transfer it to the most deserving person to go. But there's so much room for abuse. There's so much room for multiple Apple IDs and selling them on eBay. And I like this. It's simpler. It's harder to abuse. And it's more fair.
Yeah. And, you know, this is one way of going to WWDC to take part in this ticket lottery for purchased tickets at full price. As usual, as in past years, Apple also has a student scholarship system through which, you know, folks can sign up and say, you go to school, but you're already interested in iOS development, and can you get a free ticket? And they've added a funny little nuance to the criteria this year that you have to, I think they had already done this in past years where you had to like show evidence that you have an app, I think. And now I think they added a nuance, which is that you have to have some Swift code in your app.
Right.
So Manton, you and I are not going as scholarship recipients.
It's funny. I read this. So the text of it is to be considered, build and submit an app that showcases your creativity, et cetera, et cetera. Your Mac app or iOS app must be written in Objective-C and Swift or written entirely in Swift. And I'd read that. And I'm like, oh, Apple, you're like, get a typo in there. You meant Objective-C or Swift. And then I read it again.
Yeah, that's no typo.
That's exactly what they intended. And they made it very clear when they say, or written entirely in Swift.
Right.
So, you got to have a little Swift in there. And I assume if you have one Swift file and 50 Objective-C files, that you will not be considered as highly as, you know, your competition trying to get a scholarship. But I don't know. This is kind of unclear.
If you have like a Joker line of like, you know, one Swift file that just like NS log Swift sucks, then maybe you're not going to get in. Right.
Right.
Should I test that policy? Hey, now that I can't buy and return WWDC tickets, maybe I should test the limits of the scholarship application.
Well, it's a student scholarship, right? It's like, you know, that don't you have to be a student or young person? Well, like, I don't think you qualify.
Well, this is why the system needs to be tested, to clarify the rough edges. It's also open, Manton, very admirably. It's open to non-students who are affiliated with certain STEM organizations, which includes groups like App Camp for Girls, the Black Girls Code group. There's a list here that's like, you know, I don't want to go through them all, but a bunch of Girl Develop It, bunch of stuff, code.org. So
that's great.
You know, and then it's kind of loose. It's kind of loose what it means to be affiliated with those. You need to be 13 years of age or older. Check. I got that, Manton. A full or part-time student. Nope, I don't really have that. I could try to push the limits of that.
Sign up for an online, Khan Academy class or something.
Cheesy, yeah, right. Actually, now that you mention it, I just finally downloaded the Khan Academy iOS app. Or no, not the iOS. Yeah, I did download the iOS app, but I finally made an account and got started on one of their classes. Well, we should talk about that.
You are a student.
I am a part-time student in that respect. And I'm going to receive a free world-class education thanks to Khan Academy. That is their tagline, if you didn't know. But the deal is, yeah, you have to either be a part-time or full-time student, or be a member/alumni of one of the listed STEM organizations. So, but then I read somewhere else that it also included like volunteers at the STEM organizations or something like that, you know? Hmm. So there's going to, I have to clarify here. I'm talking about this only in jest. I would never try to take from a worthy,
right. There's some 13-year-old girl out there who doesn't get to go to WFDC because of you.
Move aside this nice 40-year-old, 20-year experienced Apple platform developer needs to take the place of a 13-year-old child at WWDC. But no, it's really good. And I actually read, I don't see it confirmed precisely on Apple's site, but I read, I think on a TechCrunch article or something that, I have it here. To promote diversity, Apple increases the number of WWDC scholarships. Apparently they have increased it from 250, I guess is what they've had last year. I don't know.
Wow.
Last year Apple offered 200 scholarships. And this article is confusing because it doesn't clarify how much of that is, whether that's the 200 is all from like STEM organizations or if that's the total including school, you know, student offers. But yeah, even if it's just the total is 350, that's a pretty good number for a conference, I think, that is, you know, at maximum 5,000, I think, or so attendees. That's a reasonable number of free, you know, admissions.
This is all really great. I mean, I love that Apple is doing this.
Yeah.
And it's going to be amazing for these people to have, you know, another chance to get in something. I mean, you can't, someone who's attending App Camp for Girls or something, I mean, they can't, maybe they could do like a Indiegogo thing to fund me to go to WWDC or something, but it's really difficult. So opening this up to more people, I think, is great.
Yeah. And there's something subtle that they're doing in the Apple. I want to give Apple credit for this in the WWDC pages. Like the front page for the sessions is a photo of Eliza Block, I think giving a talk at a past year's conference. Mm-hmm. And then at like the labs page, you know, there's a woman in most of the photos. Well, I haven't gone through them all, but it strikes me that you, it's one thing to say like we have STEM scholarships and we want to encourage minorities getting into, you know, Apple platforms. And I don't know, I haven't looked carefully to see like how well other minorities are represented here, but it says something to me. If I were a woman, I think in particular going to Apple's WWDC page, the fact that the main session page has a woman pictured giving a talk would, I think, make me feel more welcome to that, you know, environment, right?
Yeah, and it's not a lie, because there are a lot of women on stage. Like, I feel like the speakers tend to be more diverse than the audience a lot of times.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, yeah. So the good for Apple on that front, and in the front of trying to make, you know, more than just a gesture about, I think, trying to increase the diversity of people attending attending their conference, and then in turn, hopefully, making a, just a tiny chipping away at the problem, the greater problem in the industry. And in that sense, Manton, more and more, I think that there's an argument to be made that folks like you and me, white men with 20 years of experience on Apple platforms, not only don't need to feel bad for not attending, but maybe we should feel good for opening up the space for other people.
Yeah, I agree. I'm definitely coming along to that line of thinking. I mean, a couple of years ago, or a few, I don't know, whenever the first year was that I tried to get a ticket and I was clicking furiously within half a second, didn't get one. I was very frustrated, very bitter. But now I've not only accepted that I'm not going to get one, I've, like, as I said, I'm not even going to try, and I'm kind of at peace with the whole thing, and it removes stress, and it makes me feel better that people who have never been to WWDC before, and they're going to get so much more out of this conference than I would. I mean, I'd love it. I have a great time. I learn a lot of stuff, but I wouldn't be in awe of everything, right? And I wouldn't be going around to every single session and talking to every Apple engineer I run into and just learning everything. Yeah, it's not the same experience. So we've been used to this shift that's happened since the iPhone, where more and more WWDC attendees are first-time attendees, or they're brand new to the Mac even for a little while. And now, it just at first, I didn't know how I felt about that. You know, a lot of long-time people not being able to go to the conference anymore. But now it just seems to make the most sense. Like, you get so much more out of the conference if you've never been before, or if you've only been a couple times. That's where the focus should be. And luckily for the rest of us, we can go anyway, because we have things like AltConf. You know, we have live streams of more and more sessions. And if they're not live streamed, they're at the end of the day, they're available. So I don't feel like I'm missing out on much at all. And it's kind of a win-win, really. I can go out there for a few days, learn a lot, have a good time, meet up with people, get a lot out of the conference and the surrounding, you know, AltConf and everything else that kind of surrounds the formal conference. And I'm not taking up a ticket for somebody who is actually at the conference and also getting a ton out of their experience.
Yeah. You know, there's always going to be elements of WWDC that I miss going to San Francisco and not having a ticket and, you know, being left outside the conference center walls. But so much of the conference format and just like level of instruction is less suitable to me than, or, you know, my learning style. It's not suitable to my learning style, and it's not suitable to my expertise, in some cases. So what I think I'd like, if I had like my dream fulfilled, would be if Apple sort of continued with WWDC as this kind of like real academic style training type environment, which works well for a lot of people and just doesn't work very well for me. But just find a way, find new and exciting ways to give others of us, especially maybe even those of us with kind of longer, more in-depth experience who we benefit differently. Like you ask, like those of us who have gone for years and years and have been working on the platforms for years and years, and we tend to say that the best part about it is the lapse, right? And I think for some of those people that you are describing who are going to benefit so much from the first or second time, sure, some of them get something out of the lapse, and that's great. But I think that they would tend to say that the best thing about it for them is the sessions. So I guess what I kind of want, here's my dream. My dream event, Manton, is something like Apple invites 1,000 random experienced platform developers per year to some kind of like Apple engineering summit, right? There's no sessions. It's the labs, basically. It's the labs with 1,000 developers, you know, milling in and out of different sessions, or, you know, not sessions, sections of a huge room filled with computers and Apple engineers. And I know that that's just, that's why I said it's a dream. I know that there's lots of logistical reasons this probably can't happen, but just having more like lines of direct communication like that for not only technical, but like philosophical problems that people have. I still think Apple, for all of its, you know, it's all the changes that we've seen over the past year, I still think it has a problem to some extent with being kind of insular in its thinking. And maybe that's really good for Apple in some ways, but you know, have you had the experience, Manton, you finally get the ear of somebody at Apple about like a really annoying, vexing problem, and they kind of give you that quizzical look and they go, oh, really? Like that works that way? and you go, yes, it works that way. Every single developer in the world frets about this and thinks it's a problem and whines and gripes about it on Twitter and in blogs and anyone they can get to hear about it on podcasts like this. And yet you find like the people inside Apple who are actually, you know, it's actually their job to care about that aspect of whatever it is. They'll give you that quizzical look and be like, huh, I never knew it behaved like that. And it's like, I just feel like anything Apple could do to get a better sense of what's actually going on with developers. And then I guess, you know, the other problem is then having the will to act on that. But you know, everything from stuff like why does the App Store approval system work like this, to why does like IOKit behave in this clunky way? You know, stuff that could be handled by the bug reporting system, but for whatever reason, really doesn't seem to be getting handled by the bug reporting system.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of something like that if it's alongside WWDC, same week, parallel. Like I suggested in years past, one way you could grow the conference is to split out like game developers and app developers. You know, game developers are at Moscone North and everybody else is at West, or, you know, whatever. That way you still get the everybody's in town and you get that community aspect to the conference, which I think is extremely important, but you can grow it. And so if what you said about labs with thousands of developers, if you could do it that way, I'd be all for it. But if you did it in like February, I would not be all for it, because I think it would, I mean, honestly, it would turn into like, the more experienced developers would go to one and everyone else would go to another. Yeah. And that's no good, right? You want to have everyone mixed together. Like Apple has done, they do labs like on their campus every once in a while for small groups, you know, like developer kitchen type things, which is very exclusive. And, you know, you're invited, like, you know, the handful of people that got early access to the Apple Watch or something is an example of that, right? They invite them out. Yep. It's all hush hush. You get early access to APIs and stuff, but sometimes they'll do stuff that's public too, and they'll do it like that, but it's a small group. I wouldn't want to see something like that on a large scale unless it was actually around WWDC personally.
Yeah. Interesting. You know, you're right. I think the, this is obviously just me griping because I probably just don't think my concerns are heard well enough, but obviously Apple has systems in place already to hear from the developers they want to hear from. You know, I guess I'm just kind of thinking to like the times when I've really benefited the most from WWDC, it was because I got access to somebody who was able to either hear with empathy what my situation was and then do something about it, or just able to like give me some bit of insight into you know, the classic labs things, right? I know that I'm lucky that I'm been around long enough and I know enough people that I can sort of push my way towards people within Apple that could help me. But of course I don't like using that, that card, so to speak. I almost never do anything like that. So I liked being at the labs and having the sort of permission to raise those kind of issues. But, I guess I don't think I'll ever go. I don't think I'll ever go to the labs again, because I don't think realistically I'll go to WWDC again. Mm-hmm. And that makes me a little bit sad that I lose that connection. I wish there was something to replace it.
Yeah. That's a good point. And it's the labs is a great example of something that could kind of reinvent and evolve to help scale the conference. Doesn't look like they're going to do that this year, but I think they could without hurting the core of it. Obviously, you can't scale it too much since you only have so many Apple engineers to go around, but they could do something with that. That would be a nice compromise.
Yep.
I agree with you, though. I don't think I'm ever going to attend the actual conference again. And saying that and kind of just accepting it, like I said before, I think is a good thing for me because it removes stress. It removes a question. Like I have a lot of stuff to work on and that's one less question that I have to answer. Right. And there's that one question. Do I have, need, want a ticket? There's like, it answers when you answer that, it answers like 10 other questions automatically. Like how long are you going to stay? Where are you going to stay? You know, what do you need to do when you're there? So I'm totally fine with this and I'll miss some parts of it, but overall I'm good. I've been to a lot of WWDCs and I plan to be out there at least for probably 3 or 4 days and definitely go to AltComp, definitely get a lot out of the experience. And it's coming up. It's coming up actually pretty soon. We'll all have our shiny Apple Watches. Hopefully, some of us.
I don't think I'm going to have mine. I'm not going to have mine until after, probably.
You got the June ship date? Or?
Yeah, I'm going to have to change the shipping address to a hotel in San Francisco. I hope for the best.
WWC keynote line, 45th person. All right, this week we wanted to talk about Core Intuition jobs again. We've got a few more listings this week, and it's always great to see companies list their job on there and also people finding a job. You know, they're looking for an iOS job. Maybe it's their first time in an industry. Maybe they're just switching jobs, looking for a Mac job. It's great to hear from people who actually have found a job through the site because that's the goal, right? We want to get iOS and Mac developers good jobs and get these businesses that we all love to be able to find people and not just have to sort through hundreds of random resumes from some job site, but actually get, you know, a smaller number of high quality resumes from people who actually know what they're doing and understand like the community, everything we just talked about for the first part of the show. It's at jobs.corent.org. You can post a job for 30 days or you can go search there, follow the RSS feed or the Twitter feed to figure out what jobs are out there. There's always new ones coming up and maybe one will be good for you.
Yeah. And you know, one thing, Manton and I set this up, we kept it pretty simple. We just let people post a job. They have a link to their site or an email link. And then, you know, everyone crosses their fingers and hopes that the great resumes come in. We don't have our own hooks into knowing how well it works, which is why we're so gratified when people let us know how impressed they are with the applicants that they get and that they've hired people. And it's really great to learn that. We've heard from both employees who have gotten jobs and companies who have hired folks right off the Core Intuition job site. And the most recent one was great. It's a local company here in the Boston area, iRobot. Of course, you know them for their Roomba, among other things. And they hired a person here local in the Boston area, seemed very satisfied with it, with the hire. And they let me know that they were just so impressed with the quality of applicants they got. So I know we have many of you out there listening who are exactly those qualified applicants that will impress and delight the companies listing jobs on the site. The three most recent jobs, there's one from a company called IndraLock, which is a healthcare industry position for an iOS developer. This is one of those great jobs that comes up here and there on the site that's an anywhere job. So anywhere, presumably, in the world. Maybe it's anywhere in the U.S. I don't know. I might need to clarify that. But take a look at that one if you're in the market for a remote job. And then we've got Tinder, which is a well-known site. I think it's a dating site, Manton. Is that right?
Yeah, I don't know. Actually, it might be iPhone only, actually. It's like one of the, you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Welcome to 2015 or whatever, right? You don't even need
We don't need sites anymore. Yeah. Right. So I think most people, I hesitated to say it's a dating service because it might not technically be limited to that, but I think it's known as a dating service. And then we have OpenTable. So that Tinder job is in Los Angeles, and then the OpenTable job is in San Francisco. But, you know, we got jobs here for maybe finding a date and then booking the table for the for the restaurant.
Getting the health care once you get married.
Getting the health care that you're going to need to support your family and have a long and happy life. But yeah, maybe try not to take more than one of these jobs at a time, but go check them out. You can learn more about all the jobs we've talked about and other stuff on the site at jobs.coreint.org. And please, if you do have a successful hire or you find a job through the site, drop us a line and let us know. We're always really eager to learn how well the site is working for folks.
So as we were talking about WWDC, we did mention and kind of joked about the SWIFT requirement for student applications. And anytime something like this comes up, my first reaction actually when I saw that was also that Apple just dropped a bunch of open source on us with ResearchKit, and that was all Objective-C. So it's like, it's kind of classic Apple. Sometimes they tell you to do one thing, but then meanwhile, you know, all their frameworks and all their example code is telling you something else. So that's kind of amusing. But SWIFT. I mean, it's so obvious when Apple does something like that and says, please submit your apps in SWIFT, you know, get on the ball already, that they're pushing this and you can only fight it for so long. So how long are you going to fight moving to SWIFT, Daniel?
Well, to be honest with you, you know, I think some people have the impression that I am inherently against SWIFT. I can tell by some of the weird, I'll just say it, it's weird sometimes, the email we get. Sometimes it's been like really critical of us. And I think maybe sometimes me in particular, Manton, maybe I'm just reading into that though, assumption that I view SWIFT as a defective language, or that, you know, I don't see any value in it, or that I think, you know, Objective-C forever, like I'm waving this Objective-C flag and I'm never going to let this Objective-C ship go down. And I don't think I've expressed myself that way ever on this show. I think that the gist of what I have presented as my concerns with regard to SWIFT are whether or not it's a misuse of time to put too much energy into a half-baked language. That's a nice unloaded term for me to use, right? and what effect does, because this is the stuff I'm interested in. What effect does Apple having two languages, two active, fully supported languages for their frameworks, what effect does that have on a community that's trying, you know, to be consolidated and share techniques and advice and education and all this and that? And that's been the main focus. So for me, actually, the faster and the more aggressively Apple pushes towards SWIFT, I actually am reassured by that, because that tells me that it in my mind, it moves up the sort of fuzzy date in the future at which I would sort of decide to switch to SWIFT. When I say switch, I mean basically the day that, like, by default a new source file in my project would be SWIFT and not Objective-C, because a lot of people have already done that, you know, and I admire them for that, even if I don't share the opinion that that has been necessarily a pragmatic time to do it. It depends, you know, it's different for everybody. It depends on whether you're working on a brand new project or whether you, are maintaining an older source base like ours, Manton, with lots of Objective-C already in it. And how reliable the tools have been for you for whatever particular use of SWIFT you're trying to do. But, I'm not going to stand around with my head in the sand. If Apple's pushing SWIFT and it's becoming clearer and clearer, not only that it's going to be well supported by the tools, that it's going to be, supported by the frameworks, and that, you know, the OS is going to have like the infrastructure and runtime there to make it possible to have SWIFT apps that are high performance and behave the way users want them to, like, why wouldn't I switch to that? Like, I'm not comfortable with SWIFT right now, but it's not because of the language or because, it's just because I haven't put the time in to get comfortable with it. And I look forward to a time when we're all essentially on one language again. You know, like for the past 10 years that I've been working on my own in the Apple platforms, it's not exactly true that the company has been on one language. We've been on Objective-C, but we've also been, of course, on C. with core foundation stuff, and it's different. And I should hasten to add also C++, of course.
Mm-hmm. And Pascal, if you go far in the back.
Yeah. But realistically, you know, C++, C, and Objective-C, and there's different idioms, of course, for how you program in those. But for the most part, you could kind of say with some confidence, if I meet another Coco programmer, he or she is an Objective-C programmer.
Right.
And these days, we're at a real point in history where it's a rift, where we've got plenty of new Coco programmers now who don't write any Objective-C. And we got the old timers like you and I who are still, practically speaking, only writing Objective-C. And I look forward to a time in the future when I can go to a meetup and have confidence that the stuff I share in Swift is going to be understood by everybody in the room, and the stuff that other people share in Swift will be understood by me, because we're all back to a kind of de facto standard language.
Yeah.
So I'll switch to, I would switch tomorrow if I felt like it wasn't, if I still felt like it wasn't a risk. And to be honest, it is feeling less and less like a risk, because it feels like it is getting stable. Some of the shortcomings are disappearing faster, frankly, than I expected.
Yeah.
What do you think, Manton? What's your expectation for if and when you would switch to Swift? When will you reach that point where the new class that you add to your app would be in Swift by default instead of Objective-C?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, last year at WWDC, when I was starting to play with Swift, I played with some example things and little projects. And then I came back home, and the first thing I did was like make one file in a large project Swift, thinking that I could transition slowly one file at a time. But I let that go because Swift was changing a lot and I wasn't good enough with it to be productive. And I'm still kind of in that boat, and I'm still juggling a lot of other things that it doesn't make sense right now for me to slow down and learn Swift. But I think I agree with you that it's improved more quickly than I thought. And I hope that some of the rough parts are behind us. And I would love nothing more than at WWDC this year, I'll go to sessions. I won't go to sessions. I'll watch videos of sessions. I will get more in tune with what's going on Swift, the latest and greatest. And after that, I will maybe jump in a little more. Yeah. And WWDC is always a good milestone for me to wrap up projects or start new projects, because it's kind of like, you know, you're going to be gone for a while. And I don't know, I always like wrapping up at least a couple things before that trip. And so it would be a good time after that, after the new stuff, latest version of macOS 10, latest version of iOS.
Yep.
I've had the watch on my wrist for a few weeks and that hype has died down. Swift hopefully will be a little more mature, and that's when I think I'll be ready to jump in. Maybe not fully, but it does seem like over the next year it just makes sense to move in more and more stuff that way, if for no other reason than to be active in the community and, like you just said, talking to people, speaking the same language, reading sites. I read lots of Coco-related blogs, and a lot of people post example code in Swift. At some point, you're going to be kind of fighting the norm if you're not using at least a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, right after WWDC is a great time to dig into stuff that Apple has announced, because you know that at least you've got the roadmap sort of speak for probably. You've got most information you're going to get for another year at one point in time.
Right. You're not going to be totally surprised in 2 months that there's a brand new API or something.
Right.
Things will be the most stable they could possibly be.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of like buying a new MacBook or something. Like, you know, if you buy the new MacBook the day that they announce it, they're not going to make a new one, right? 6 weeks later. Right. And yeah. So it's kind of safer. And so, yeah, actually, from that point of view, like, now is kind of a dumb time to maybe jump all in to some new technology that was announced last year at WWDC.
Yeah.
I guess it goes both ways. You could say like now's a great time because then you go to WWDC with full of questions and up to date on the current status quo. But some of that's going to be blown away when they announce new things.
Yeah, you can definitely get burned if you time things wrong.
Yep.
Apple's not afraid to deprecate stuff. And I still have apps we've talked about on the show recently that use old stuff. And yeah, you don't want to be the last person to adopt the deprecated old API.
Man, it's just hard to imagine. There's been so much stuff, starting with last year's WWDC announcement of Swift. And then we had the whole announcement of over the course of the year, we had the whole announcement of the watch, the, you know, imminent release of the watch, rumors and speculation about new Apple TV stuff. It's sort of hard to imagine, like, what is there going to be like an, oh my God, nobody saw that coming aspect to WWDC this year?
It could, but I hope not. Every year I hope for less, not more. And, you know, iOS 8.4, the beta just came out, and, you know, we're so close to WWDC. A lot of people are like, what? Why, you know, why you'd release this thing? Why not wait to WWDC? And there's a bunch of possible explanations. One is they have so much stuff at WWDC. They got to release some stuff earlier. It'll be overwhelming. But another that I kind of like is maybe they're preparing us for an iOS 8.5. Mm. How great would that be? I would love that.
We'll spend a whole 2 years on iOS 8 instead of 1 year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you alternate, you know, 0.5 releases every other year with Mac and iOS. So every WWDC, you have something big, maybe even a couple big things, right? They have a lot of platforms now with the watch, with Apple TV.
Right.
But you don't necessarily need to have a major, major brand new thing every year for every single platform. And by saying 8.5, you're sending a very clear message that this is stability, performance, bug fixes, better.
Yeah.
But it's not a major paradigm shift or something.
I wonder if the Apple is secure enough in its position in the iPhone or the iOS, I'm using these Apple product names to try to identify the smartphone market. I wonder if they're secure enough in the smartphone market or the mobile market, I guess, including tablets, to kind of get off that treadmill. Because I think it's been my perception that Apple sees its competition, takes its competition very seriously. And that's why part of the reason why we've had this like crazy every year new release. If they announce at WWDC that iOS 8.5 is going to be the big deal this year, some people, and not to say that they're justified in doing this, but some people are going to spin that as like Apple loses ground to Google, or Apple, you know, can't keep up with pace of Android releases.
Right. Yeah. And it's so unlikely that Apple would do this.
Yeah.
It's what I would do if I was running Apple, but I also wouldn't have come up with Mac OS 10, 11, something, something. So
right. We have our standards.
Yeah. It's different. I don't think it's likely. I do think there will be a focus on, you know, stability and performance and the Snow Leopard type release, but it's unlikely it's going to be called 0.5. I can dream.
So that actually, do you think Mac OS 10 is going to be called 10.11 this year?
I guess so. Because they missed the boat. It's ridiculous. It's so stupid. They should have last year said Mac OS 11.
Yeah.
They should not have said Mac OS 10, 10. It's ridiculous. But they missed the boat. That was their chance last year.
They could still call it 11. They could still call it 11.
Yeah, but calling it 11 now would be admitting that last year was a huge naming mistake.
Mm.
Last year was the time to do it because
it was
a nice, fresh UI. The numbering actually counts up correctly. Last year was the time to do it.
All right. Well, we have to just like try to get into this for a second without letting it turn into a 2-hour thing. Epicenter of change. It raises the question, is this finally the year that the two OSs combine in some way? And that would settle the versioning problem because it would be
That's
Epicenter
true.
OS 1.0, you know, it would be Apple OS 1.0, whatever they want to call it.
I still think we're far off from that.
I tend to agree.
I don't think we're ready for that. But I don't know. I guess I don't read too much into those little taglines because I can't even remember what some of the previous ones are. And I don't know if anyone ever really follows up. Yeah, everyone speculates. What does it mean? What is this little logo?
What does
it mean?
But then
when they actually announce stuff, does anyone go back and say, I was right on my speculation? No, everyone forgets everything about.
Let's just look back to see what the WWDC 2014 one was. How do we do that? We Google WWDC 2014 announced.
I think someone actually put together like a bunch of the invites from the last few years.
Yeah.
But I don't know where it is.
And it's telling, I guess, that we can't just think of it off the top of our head. And it's just last year.
Exactly.
And I'm not finding it easily. Like, you know, what was it?
All right. I think I found a site that has one. We'll link it up. So 2013, 14 had no tagline.
What? No tagline?
I don't think so.
It must have been something. Oh, so sometimes people make hay about just the icon, right? Like there was like layers of plastic that went with, I think, 2013. Remember? And I think that was like just alluding to iOS 7 or something.
So going back, what I'm looking at, you have to go back to 2012 before you get anything that just says it's the week we've all been waiting for, which doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, you're right.
Maybe they don't do those taglines so much for WWDC as like the special events.
Yeah, maybe.
Those seem to have more of a little catchy slogan.
Yeah, I could swear they did, but maybe it is just like the graphics and stuff. And then also, of course, the banners that are inevitably leaked because somebody like sees them putting them up or whatever at the center. Mm-hmm. I guess they're not inevitably leaked. Sometimes it seems like little glimpses of them are leaked, but come to think of it, they usually keep them under wraps now with like white plastic or something and then bring them down on the day.
Anyway, I don't read anything into this. It might mean something, it might not. I don't know. We'll find out in less than 2 months.
Yeah. Epicenter of change. I don't know. It's it doesn't seem like one of those phrases that some marketing person just made up willy-nilly to me. It seems like it has some coded meaning, which is what, of course, makes it alluring. But I'll try to just bide my time and not think too much about it.
Yeah. I don't know. The more you talk, the more convinced I am that it's meaningful. But I could speculate 5 different things that it could be. And
yeah,
might be a 6th thing that I didn't.
Oh,
think
we could.
Of.
I mean, it's so vague that it just gets the imagination going. Yeah. It could mean a new dedicated CPU epicenter. You know, the central mm-hmm. processing unit for all Apple devices becomes some new ARM chip. Who knows? Crazy times.
Yeah. I mean, there's the word change is equally important in that too. And that,
yeah,
maybe I don't want to think about it too much because it scares me. Cause I just spent 5 or 10 minutes talking about how I think they should not do that much.
Right.
And now they're going to change everything.
You're right. Change is a dangerous word, man. I mean, change means work for developers. That's what change means.
Yeah.
No matter how you spin it, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, you know, Swift, for example, means work. It's so it can be a very good thing, but it's a daunting word to have focused as one of the only 3 words or 4 words in the tagline for a conference.
Yeah, it's exciting too. Hopefully it's the right kind of change.
Yeah. Well, Manton, maybe we should wrap this up and get back to our own epicenters of change in our respective home offices. I want to remind folks that the job board is there, jobs.corent.org. Thank you very much to us for sponsoring the show this week. And check it out if you are looking for a job or looking to hire a great, talented Cocoa developer. And remember, folks, we are people too, so we thrive on positive feedback. And if you have the time to give us a rating or review in the Apple Podcast directory, that really makes our day occasionally when we see something new pop up in there. Tell your friends about the podcast if you think they might enjoy it. Help us get the word out. Keep this crazy show going with the motivation or the momentum that it has had. And Manton, anything else you want to wrap up with this week?
So we do have one new thing that we hadn't talked about on the show yet, and that is our Slack channel.
Oh, of course.
Our set of channels for the podcast. So this is an experiment. We just tried this earlier this week, and it's open to anybody. You can go to chat.corrent.org, and there's a little app there that'll basically send you an invite to the channel, and then you can join. And we have a great set of people in there so far, really interesting discussions. And we have a couple channels for the podcast, just general random stuff, one for the job site, one for WWDC. So if you want to kind of coordinate with people, figure out what people are doing, what people are excited about, rumors, speculation, all that kind of stuff around WWDC, there's that. And so we're just experimenting with it. And so far, I'm happily surprised. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, we've got over 150 people joined up. They're not all, obviously all online and active at the same time. That might be too much, but it's pretty cool that we have all these people now that we've come to enjoy having as audience members of the podcast. Actually, they're able to engage live. We chat, they chat, everybody can chat with each other. Good opportunity to share coding tricks and chat about news in the Apple world just the same way Manton and I do on the show each week. So definitely check it out. Once again, that's at chat.corrent.org. And we hope to see some of you who hadn't heard about it. There's the only reason there's people in there already is because we tweeted about it and spread the word a little bit that way. But if you haven't already come in, haven't already seen it, come by and give us a visit, say hi, and meet some of your fellow listeners.
Great. Hope to see you there. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And we'll talk to you next week, Daniel.
You too. Take care, Manton.